Hey, everybody, welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of June. This is 2020. We are up to our eyeballs in WWDC this week. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kelly. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you with me. Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, greetings. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Now, John, I want to start with you a bit because one of the things that we didn't get to talk about yesterday is virtualization on these shiny new machines to be from Apple. For people who don't know, Apple has already announced that they are going to move to new processors inside their machines. They're Apple Silicon or the ARM machines that I've had John on the show to talk about before. And actually, it was both of you to talk about before, hashing out what a transition to ARM would mean for Apple. And John, you've been looking at specifically what it means for virtual machines on Apple hardware.
I've been following this ever since the first glimmer of a rumor of Apple switching to ARM processors.
Yes.
And I realized right away that virtualization was going to be an issue, and I kept beating the bandwagon virtually every month since, talking about how, yes, virtualization is coming. Virtualization is coming. It won't be a problem. And there'll be virtualization along with instruction set translation. And everybody kept whining, oh, no, we won't be able to run Windows on these new Macs. And it just was like frustrating uphill battle trying to convince people that Apple would do Rosetta and Apple would do virtualization capability on these ARM chips, which we're not familiar with because we don't see it on iPads and iPhones. And Apple followed the script exactly. We've been down this road before. We had a PowerPC to Intel template. We knew that there would be virtualization in the new chips in order to support other operating systems because Apple was not going to give that up. And in the hands of a company like Parallels with geniuses and brilliant programmers, we knew it was going to happen. And Rosetta, which came out in 2006 on G4s and Tiger, oh my God, oh my God. These machines that we're shipping now are maybe 100 or 150 or 200 times faster than those G4s of 2006. And so instruction set emulation is going to be even easier than it was before in 2006. I mean, 14 years ago, the machines were so slow, and yet we all went through that transition, and I didn't have any complaints.
Yeah. However, the difference now is that it's not doing real-time instruction set translation in most cases.
Yeah, it right? is. No.
No.
Why?
No, not at all. It's going to be doing, in terms of Rosetta, Rosetta 2, I should say, when you run Intel code on a Apple Silicon machine, and it's clear that that name is a placeholder for some branded name that they will, call things when they roll out for consumers, but that's fine. Maybe not a placeholder. I think it will always exist, but there's something else, right, that will be coming. If it's from the Mac App Store, the code is translated at download time on your Mac, I believe, although there's no reason it couldn't happen in the store too, but it's translated certainly at or before download time. And they talked about a translation cache in the State of the Union yesterday. So translation cache means, and if it's not from the Mac App Store, if it's, say, an app that you downloaded from a company like Rogue Amoeba, translation will also happen at first launch. So it only ever has to happen once.
So
it will, though, translate in real time if there's something that needs to be translated in real time. Like they kept referring to JavaScript libraries or JIT stuff, I guess not JavaScript, but JIT stuff from the web or whatever. Like, it can do it in real time, but since it's obviously more efficient to do it once and then just run it many times, that's how it'll be for most of the stuff that we run.
How long does that take?
That's a great question, John, and it's one that none of us yet have the answer for.
Yeah.
But now, presumably not terribly long.
I have a couple of questions about this.
I haven't seen the State of the Union yet, so thanks for filling us in, Dave.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I have a couple of questions about emulation, we'll call it, in general, not necessarily virtualization. And that's, first of all, one of the things that we got with the Intel transition was now that there's Intel hardware in the Mac, just like there is in all those Windows machines, you can just run Windows on it if you want. And you can just install Windows as a separate thing, and Bootcamp will just handle that for you. So my question about this is it now like it's Parallels world and the rest of us are just living in it because that's not going to be a hardware level thing anymore? Or, you know, like our basically our Bootcamp stays numbered. And then my other question is about the App Store, right? Because like on iOS, if you have an app that will run on an iPhone and on an iPad, this is my understanding, and maybe I'm completely wrong. If you have all of that, like people started shipping the universal binary, so to speak, and if I go to the App Store and I want to download this app on my phone, it sort of gives me the phone version, and if I want it on my iPad, it gives me the iPad version. But I only ever have to do the one, like I, as a developer of that app, I can just upload this one thing, and here's like all the instructions for it, and here's the whole. It's just one thing, and I can just download it either place, and it's fine.
So what's the question, Kelly?
Well, my question is that what they're going to have to do with the Mac App Store once we have two different kinds of Macs? Like, you can upload a universal binary. I thought they did, and I just wasn't 100% on that. I heard a whole lot of new stuff yesterday.
Sure. So, oh, no. This is why we talk through this stuff. Yeah. So for the answering your questions in reverse order,
yes.
Because we have an answer to the second one. Apps can either, well, they can be built one of three ways, presumably, as they currently exist, which are Intel apps that will download and run natively on Intel and be translated and put in the translation cache on Apple Silicon. Then there is the, presumably the flip side to that, which is an Apple Silicon only app that will not ever run on Intel, at least in terms of Apple's current guidance, and only would run on Apple Silicon. But I don't think, at least out of the gate, that we'll see too much of that. My guess is that Apple won't allow it, except in certain, you know, special cases, because they want to have this multi-year transition, and they're still selling new Macs that are based on Intel. So they need to make sure they preserve that politically, and also just, you know, by doing the right thing. So then there's this third case, which is the case you're talking about, Kelly, which is where the developer compiles this universal version that has code for both Apple Silicon and Intel. And the way they described it is, and I think this was in the State of the Union, they described it as each of those separate pieces of compiled code would live as a slice inside this universal app.
Okay.
In addition to that, you've got like all your other things, like your graphics and all of that, that doesn't need, that isn't platform dependent, right? So lots of those things can just live in the bundle once. They don't need to be there twice. So yeah, so the Mac App Store, I don't think will need to change. I think Apple learned some lessons with, you know, iPad apps versus iPhone apps. I don't think we're going to be in that realm. So yeah.
Okay, good. Now, Bootcamp, and this is a thing that I actually filed away because, John, I thought this would be a thing that you could talk to us about, and that is what this means for Bootcamp, as I am installing directly on the hardware inside my machine and not into a virtual machine.
It's basically a PC.
Yeah.
Windows installer sees it as a conventional PC with an Intel chip.
Uh-huh.
And so you install the operating system on a drive and it boots up.
Uh-huh.
With some infrastructure placed in the hardware so that you can boot up as a Windows machine. So my understanding, and Dave weigh in on this, is that when you try to install Windows on an ARM Mac, it's not going to work at all unless Apple goes to some great length to pave the way and make that happen. Otherwise, Bootcamp looks like it's done.
Yeah, so I agree with all of that. Windows Bootcamp, as we currently know it, would have to be done, because what Bootcamp is exactly what you said. It allows this Intel computer to be to have something other than Mac OS installed, right? You can do Linux, right. You can do Windows, you can do all of that, but it's not virtualized and it's not sandboxed. I guess we could argue it is sandboxed, but it's not running alongside of Mac OS or inside of, it's running instead of Mac OS.
Right.
So Windows, in order for Boot Camp to exist, Windows would have to run on ARM.
Well, it does.
That's the thing, is Windows 10 can run on ARM.
Well, right? So, I'm right about that, right? Okay. The Surface Pro X or Pro 10 or whatever, like, that's an ARM chip with a Windows operating system on it. I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. And there's a whole series of documentation on Microsoft's site about Windows on ARM. So perhaps this is a moot point. Maybe Boot Camp continues.
Microsoft ARM hardware, but maybe the firmware on the ARM Mac is not set up for ARM Windows.
Right. So maybe we get Boot Camp 2 or something. This is all speculation, and I'm asking because I do know a few people who are using Boot Camp. It's not a ton. And I'm legally obligated to do this because I have John on the show. The plural of anecdote is not data. But I know people who are going to have a vested interest in this going forward.
Commander data.
And when they're in the market for a new machine, what does this mean for those people who are using it? So that's why this is a thing I want to know about.
The question I have is that I seem to remember that the Windows that is running on ARM is a slightly watered down version of Windows.
Okay. Well, I feel like if you have particularly high powered Windows needs, then you might, Boot Camp may not be the right answer for you anyway, right? So,
yeah,
it's possible. Yeah,
but I don't think there's a one-to-one analogy between Windows on ARM and Windows on Intel. I believe the Windows on ARM is a less capable version because the ARM chips Microsoft is selling are.
Well, I don't know about that. What I do know is that Microsoft says Windows 10 on ARM runs all x86, ARM 32, and ARM 64 UWP, Universal Windows Programs, perhaps. But it's the U means universal. I don't know what the others mean.
Yeah.
From the Microsoft Store, ARM 32 and ARM 64 apps run natively without any emulation, while x86 apps run under emulation.
Okay.
So, I mean... Now the big question would be if you have, and this is all speculation at this point, but it's a good question to ponder. If you have an x86 based Windows app that you need to run, and heretofore you have been using Boot Camp to do so, would it be faster to run it in this theoretical Boot Camp that we don't even know if it'll exist, but let's say it does, theoretical Boot Camp under Windows for ARM in Windows emulation, or would it be better to let Parallels handle the emulation inside of Mac OS and run an x86 version of Windows that runs an x86 app and the whole thing is emulated? I don't know the answer to that, but that would be
well, John's getting that out in English language and decipherable.
Blown John's mind, and so I'm going to take this opportunity.
No, that was a brilliant explanation without any syntactic or logic errors. Nice.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to let John sit there and be impressed while I talk about this week's sponsor. Our sponsor is iMazing Configurator. You've heard me talk about iMazing before. You've heard Dave talk about iMazing before. Aside from occasionally sponsoring some of our shows, iMazing is a really great app. It's basically a device manager. It lets you do all of the stuff that you used to want to do in iTunes that always drove you crazy. And you can do all of that. You can make backups. You can create alternate backups. So if you are one of those people who has ignored all sane advice and decided to install Beta 1 on your device, you can make sure that you have a solid 100% backup of every single thing, including voicemail, text messages, all the little documents and all the weird little settings and things on your phone. You can make sure all that stuff is preserved in iMazing. And iMazing has just come out with something now called iMazing Configurator, which allows you to do local supervision, configuration, and provisioning of iOS devices. So if you're a person who has to manage a fleet of iOS devices, you've been doing this with Apple Configurator, you can do it now with iMazing Configurator instead. You can do up to 20 devices at a time, which is 20 iPhones all at once, or 20 iPads. You can have them launch in single app mode. You can run the iOS update on more than a dozen iPods at a time, iPod Touches or iPhones or iPads. It's super great to have this sort of utility. You can use it to create blueprints and do all other sorts of awesome management things, which are way less awesome when you have to do them repetitively over and over again. Ask me how I know. You can find out more at iMazing.com/configurator. And not only can you find out more, you can get a free trial at iMazing.com/configurator. And I'd like to thank iMazing for sponsoring the show today. Now, I want to get back to our virtualization conversation, because Dave, you mentioned something that I think is very interesting, which is in the developer State of the Union. I do remember this bit from yesterday. In the developer State of the Union, there was a point where they said, like, we're using Parallels to show you that you can run Linux on this new machine.
Totally. And they ran Parallels during the keynote. They just didn't say it, but I mean, right. It was clearly there in the, you know, screenshots, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, they were running Parallels to do it. Yeah,
they were demonstrating Linux, and the reason they probably didn't show Windows was because it probably wasn't ready yet. But it's coming, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. That was also my speculation, John. I mean, they couched it very well. Like, look, this is a thing that developers like to do. And so and they're not wrong.
Right.
But it's kind of weird that they would have used Parallels. I mean, there's other ways of setting up, like, I know a lot of developers just set up a web server, but they're right that, you know, Docker and other sorts of virtualization, Parallels being one of them, are nice ways to compartmentalize those things. Docker is, in fact, awesome for exactly what they were showing, because mm-hmm. you get to just, like, have a very lightweight thing that it's like, that will never be messed with, even though I'm updating my system around it. It's like, nope, it's all right there, but it's super lightweight and all that. So, yeah.
Yes. Do you know if VMware Fusion is going to make the leap? I assume so, but I haven't heard.
I have not heard anything, but I mean, that's a huge part of their business. I would hope absolutely. That they plan to. And you know, if Apple's tools, well, I mean, there's more to it than just, hey, click recompile with Universal, right? Because they now need to go back to virtualization. Not just virtualization. They need to go back to emulation, which is something that Parallels and I believe VMware Fusion, if my history is right in my head, were doing before they didn't need to anymore because we moved from PowerPC to Intel. So
right now, but, like but a thing know, that. I, go ahead, Dave.
I'm not. I like. It's good to dig into this stuff, and obviously, it's very fun to dig into it. I'm not sure that. It's a great big concern. Like, I know people are doing this stuff, and I know that VMware Fusion and Parallels have, you know, sizable markets. Mm-hmm. But it's not something everyone that runs a Mac needs to do, or even the majority of people that run a Mac. So,
yeah, like when they were talking about, you know, this is for developers, this is a developer thing that developers do. So we built it for developers, and we're showing it to you at the developers conference. Like, the thing I think would have really been the most useful to most developers I know would have been like, let me show you how easy it is to spin up a Mojave virtual machine, right? Or something like that, because that's still going to be a recent OS, right? Like, or Catalina, right? Like, let me show you what it looks like to spin up Catalina and make it act like it's running on a computer somebody actually has in their house right now. Right. Like that would have been a more real world example to me. Again, plural of anecdote is not data. The developers I know are always looking for, you know, like, I have to have a machine running the latest, but I also have to have something spun up because something weird's going to happen in the previous version of macOS when I add this feature to my app or whatever. So I think it would have been interesting to see that. Like, let's show you in real time. You can spin this up in about 5 minutes. You know, we're going to speed up the install process. And here you go. This is, you know, Mojave running on an ARM processor. Back to you. Yeah. You know, like that would have been.
Yeah.
That would have been, I think, a much more practical application for a lot of people. Because I don't know a bunch of people who are hanging out, you know, installing flavors of Linux because they need it for something they're developing. It's cool, right. And I'm glad that you can, but. Like, Yeah, I don't know who those people are. If you are those people, please let us know. Observations at MacObserver.com. Or you can get us at Timo Daily on Twitter. I definitely do want to talk to people about virtualization. And John, I'm going to point out, you had someone from Parallels on Background Mode not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely forgetting his name. Thank you.
Victor Fiss, who was a director of Parallel Sales Engineers. Mm-hmm. And he was the first to sort of let the cat out of the bag when he told me that Parallels on our Macs would not be a giant headache. In fact, he knew that they'd already
knew at that point they'd give an Apple version. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. If you have other questions about virtualization, or like I said, if you are one of those people, please let us know. And I want to thank both of you for being here. John, as always, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Dave, as always, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Fun. Yeah, I love this one. That's good.
Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to dig into the rest of what comes out of WWDC this week. I will talk to all of you about it tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.